It was a great destiny to be a queen, but it was not an easy one. Maria Komnina had been only 13 when she was to wed to the King of Jerusalem, a man almost 20 years older than she, a man who spoke not a word of her Greek, while she spoke not a word of his native French. Even religion had not been a bond between them, for he followed the Latin Church of Rome, and she had been raised in the Greek Orthodox faith. And she soon discovered that her husband's past was inextricably entwined with her present, for Amalric had 2 young children and a former wife, a woman very beautiful and very bitter. Her new kingdom was not a welcoming one. Known as Outremer, French for the land beyond the sea, it was a country cursed with pestilent fevers and the constant shadow of war. Nor were her husband's subjects enthusiastic about the marriage. She'd soon discovered that the Franks scorned Greeks as untrustworthy and effeminate, and were suspicious of this new alliance with the Greek Empire. It was, in every respect, an alien world to her, and she'd been desperately homesick, missing her family and the familiar splendour of Constantinople, which made Jerusalem and Acre and Tyre seem like paltry villages. Looking back now, Maria was embarrassed to remember how often she'd cried herself to sleep in those first few weeks of her marriage. But she was a Greek princess, great niece to the Emperor Manuel Komnenos, and she was determined not to bring shame upon the Greek royal house. She set about learning French. She spent hours memorizing the names of the bishops and barons of Outremer. She hid her shock at the sight of clean-shaven lords. Beards were a cherished symbol of masculinity in her old life. She adopted the Frankish fashions, wearing her hair in 2 long braids and not always veiling her face when she ventured out in public, as high-born ladies of the Greek Empire did. And she did her best to please her new husband. Her mother had warned her that Amalric would not be the easiest of men to live with. He was courageous, strong-willed, and intelligent, and men believed him to be a good king. He inspired respect, not affection, but there was a coldness about him that kept others at arm's length. He was reserved and often aloof, a man of few words who was sensitive about his slight stammer. But Maria had not expected to find love in marriage or even companionship, asking only that her husband show her the honour due her rank. She'd learned at an early age that theirs was a world in which men set the rules and women had to play by them, even queens. In her infrequent letters back home, she'd assured her parents that Amalric treated her well, and that was not a lie. While he was unfaithful, he did not flaunt his concubines at court. He'd not consummated their marriage until she was 14, and at first she'd been worried that he found her unattractive, for Greek brides of 12 were deemed old enough to share their husbands' beds. But it seemed that was not the custom among the Franks, who believed pregnancies to be dangerous for half-grown girls. When Amalric did claim his marital rights, Maria did not enjoy it, and she sensed he did not enjoy it much either, merely doing his duty to get her with child. He'd not reproached her, though, for failing to get pregnant straight away, and she'd been grateful for that. In public, he was unfailingly courteous, in private, preoccupied and distant. They never quarrelled, rarely spoke at all. The truth was that even after more than 4 years of marriage, they were still 2 strangers who sometimes shared a bed. Easter was the most sacred of holy days for both the Latin and the Greek Orthodox churches. It was also a social occasion, and Amalric's lords and their ladies had already begun to arrive in Jerusalem, not wanting to miss the lavish festivities of the king's Easter court. For Maria, these royal revelries were a mixed blessing. She enjoyed the feasting and entertainment, but not the inevitable appearances of Amalric's one-time wife. She'd not expected that Agnes de Courtenay would continue to play a role in their lives. Barely or not, scandal attached itself to her repudiated wife, and she'd assumed that Agnes must have withdrawn to a nunnery, as such women usually did. Instead, Agnes had promptly remarried, taking as her new husband Hugh de Belin, who'd once been her betrothed, and as Hugh's wife, she had to be made welcome at court, however little Amalric or Maria liked it.